Welcome to the Deer Springs annual meeting.
Morning, Dirk.
Morning. We'll go around and introduce each other, beginning with Dale, and then around the table here, and then into the audience.
I'm Dale Clarkson. My wife, Pat, is preparing food in the kitchen.
Dirk Clayson, outgoing board president.
Donna Cox, board member.
Jerry Akers, board member. Linda Alderman, secretary of education.
Dirk Clarkson, board member.
Then out here.
That's Damien, right?
I'm Ken Lynn, Lot 273. Brother Allen, Lot 16. South Grant, Lot 2. Mark Grant, Lot 3.
Nancy, could we ask you to give us an opening prayer today? Amen. Thank you, Nancy. Okay, we're going to go over the meeting minutes of the last year's 2010 meeting, and Linda Alderman will take care of that.
The unofficial minutes have not been ratified yet. Board members Ben Clarkson, Dirk Clayton, Shana Cox, Brent Fulmer, John Harris. Thank you. And Dave Turley. Well, we had a prayer by Nelson Allen, and the 2009 minutes were read and approved. The financial report was given by Linda Alderman and Dirk Clayton and accepted unanimously. Dirk explained the two-year carryover, how the voting system works. Carryovers were Dirk Clayton, Brett Fulmer, and Ben Clarkson. The introduction of the board of director candidates, each were given 5 minutes. Those that spoke were Jody Akers, Ed Belinsky, Dale Clarkson, Shauna Cox, Dean DeMille, Kathy Duvall, Michelle Hall, John Harris, Ken Lynn, and Dave Turley. Voting of the members of the Board of Directors ballots were then collected and added to those sealed ballots mailed that have been mailed in. And Alderman then took a committee of six, which I will need today, none of whom were connected to the candidates. The ballots were tallied. The ballots were tallied as the meeting went on. Nancy Burns, Karen Fry, Linda Alderman, Jane Singletary, Lois Nyman, Nancy Brady. Each tallied the ballots individually, utilized the ballots Judge Tina Campbell, the county did not have legal right to maintain the roads due to copying one of those roads. We did receive permission from the BLM to do some maintaining ourselves on occasion, and we filed for our own legal permit. BLM okayed King County to do the maintenance, but when King County asked for this to be put in writing, the written approval was never provided. County filed a quiet title action and grouped about 15 roads, including Student Paw and Hole in the Rock, in a lawsuit. It also asked the Student Paw issue to file on a summary judgment, and the judge denied. They then asked for re-judgment on just the Student Paw, RS-2477, granted right away, and now this road can never be taken away from the county. However, BLM did not grant permission to maintain over the state land sections of the Student Paw, and litigation still needs to be done on where the private property ends to end up paying them on Johnson Canyon Road. About 7 miles. Being approved on August 31st, 2010, the county was out the next morning working on the road. Thanks to all the personnel at DSROA for helping to push this along and putting the pressure on the legal units to get this done. On September 25th, 2010, there will be a rally to celebrate that you are backed by the county and DSROA at 2 p.m. Dave Turley, the Pavilion County requests an official engineering blueprint before permit could be issued. Sites of the pavilion will be 2422. Mention of water thickets to be placed near the pavilion, but thought not to be a good idea because of the cows in the area that would damage it. This is up at the upper pond. Barn restoration. Barn was re-roofed a couple of months ago and completed. Still needs some more work structurally. Plans in place to replace three columns and two beams. Emails will be sent out for member volunteers to help when needed. Ranch activity. Shauna Cox, Cattle Drive discussion on how to inform members of state. 4th of July celebration at the Ranch of Success. Ranch Olympics purpose is to attract members to the ranch when occupancy is lower. The event winners were goat milking contest, a Leobrate pancake eating contest, I wasn't sure, corn hulling contest, Alan Moorhead, target shooting, guns, bow and arrow, water balloon volleyball, first annual chili cook-off winner, Cam Lent. Shauna could not remember some of the winners, check with her. Geocaching map located in the store for geocaching adventure, shooting range by the gravel pit, still working on RV pads and dump station by the airport and ranch headquarters. Cabin renovation, Dave Harris. Cabin number 2, deck being rebuilt by Larry Kim. Cabin number 6 needs new doors for crew travel to hang doors with the help of Paul and John Harris. Lots of doors already allocated in the 2010 budget. Adopt a cabin program. Nancy Brayton. She's in charge of that. Cabins adopted were 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 8, and 3 families adopted the garden cabin. The renovation won't begin until next fall. The Jose is adopted number 8, and it looks great. A new floor will be put in this month. Other cabins have received mattresses, new mattress pads, headboards, and people put plaques in these adopted cabins telling who adopted them, thanks to the great direction in this program. County zoning ordinance, DIRT. About 8 years ago, DSROA was zoned agriculturally, and the county changed to forest recreation, which was just a name change with no change in restrictions. Did allow for a second dwelling to be placed on the lot. Without notice, the county changed the zoning ordinance sometime in that time frame of 2006 to 2008, and no longer had forest recreation in it. Then, 4 to 5 months ago, after they needed to rezone everything in the forest recreation and make it fit with zones they already had in place. The change also took out
the second dwelling. There was an organized showing in the county meeting object to this. Basic response from existing members was that they didn't know, as no pre-notification was provided by the county. County acted without officer authority and made the chairman of the planning and zoning. Dale Markson, Dale Spencer, and Keaton are now the new commissioners. Dale Markson, Dale Spencer, and Keaton are now the new commissioners. Planning commissioners. Okay, I need to put that in. This would stop the previous direction they were going, but still does not show the Forest Red Green still in upstate of Limbo. Fire management, Brent Fulmer. Fire treatment has been done along Meadow Canyon Road back through the heavy oak. Chips can be used by members around their property, and some will be used around the new pavilion. Go ahead and take some, but leave them in town for the pavilion. King County Emergency Services would like to have this done on our ingress and egress main route. Property owners willing to invest the time and effort in trimming and chipping or clipping around their property may be able to utilize the chipper for the pile. Chipper donated last year by Fargo, a member, and is available, but prefer to have somebody that knows how to use it with you when you use it. Gordon donated two base systems for communication at the ranch, one at headquarters and one at Brent, and one at Johnny Brown. These are for emergency communication. The water tank and lower system all have replaced parts in the lower water system and replaced valves on the cabin. We have installed a new hydrant and a valve by the fire pit. The hydrant is a headquarters tank was to be relined in May, but because of scheduling conflicts, they are just now currently in the progress of sand blasting and lining, and should be 100% by the first and second, or second week in October. Paul has been taking classes to be a certified water operator through the state. A sanitary survey is done every 3 years, and except one on the tank, the system has passed with flying colors. Upper system will take a little more time and effort, but eventually be good to go. Official count for the board of directors was announced. Election results for the 2010 election for Deer Springs Ranch Owners Association board of director ballots received by mail and handed in personally with a deadline to receive the ballots by mailing September 10th or at the annual meeting held September 11th. Official ballots only were counted during the annual meeting by a committee of five under the direction of Secretary Reservation Clerk Linda Alderman. The count was David Turley, 113 votes. Dale Clarkson, 100 votes. Shauna Cox, 91. Kathy Duvall, 65. These are the new board members. The other votes were Joni Akers, 63, Ken Lynch, 57, Ed Walensky, 51, John Harris, 44, Michelle Hall, 20, Dean DeMille, 6, and there were three write-ins, Brent Fulmer, Nancy Nielsen, and Greg Kavler. The meeting was then adjourned for a delicious potluck lunch.
Thank you. Do I have a motion on the meeting minutes?
I make a motion that we accept the minutes as they are read.
Motion's been made. Is there a second?
A second.
2 seconds. Jody and Dale. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you, Linda. That was a stellar job of reading and taking the minutes. I'd like to go over the financial report. We'll go over kind of some highlights, and then in the board meeting later, these reports will be able to be useful. Yes?
In December of 2010, each lot owner was assessed $434 for the year of 2011. About 75% of the membership paid their assessments into the funds, and the association of the associations, and the budget was of that has been used to upgrade headquarters, as you can see. Doesn't it look nice? It's really good. $9,760 has gone to culverts and repairs needed on roads. $13,000 was budgeted for water resources. $3,995 of that was spent to resurrect the water flow and catchments on the rim. You'll hear more about that later. $1,133 on water rights, $5,318 on maintenance and repair, and $2,100 to set the Meadow Canyon Spring area as a water source. $6,553 has kept the cabins in good working order. $7,597 for a fine fence along the north part of the ranch. That was built by one of our members. We bought a 20-foot container around behind the ranch, and currently there is $17,000 to finish out the year. We expect more capital, which I got some today from Costco. So that's my financial report.
Thank you very much, Linda. Very helpful. Just to kind of point out a couple of things of what Linda said. So we're down kind of, I would say, an unusual amount in collections, $20,000 under what we budgeted, and that's probably a little bit unusual given this time of year. We pushed forward and did a lot of collections last year and cleaned up a lot of the delinquent accounts, and there are four accounts right now that we have in some type of a legal proceeding that will probably bring in $7,000 or $8,000 of that in any case. And the rest probably just represents a little bit of the general hardship of our economy. In other sources of income, we're down a total of $35,000, so we're $15,000 short. However, three of those items will probably still come in. The wildlife income from our deer permit this fall.
That's what I received today, $4,508.
Great, so that's $500 over what we had budgeted. And livestock, we still will receive a fall payment from our livestock contract, and our interest income, which is also associated with delinquent fees. So nonetheless, I think that we'll probably still be around $15,000 short of where we would have budgeted. Our expenses year to date are $43,000 under what we've budgeted, and of course some of those expenses still are anticipated to come in, the remaining wages for the balance of the year and some of the projects that we're working on. But I think we'll easily be able to come in under $15,000 under that budget as well, so that we'll come out still under budget overall. So I think things are looking fairly healthy, and in addition to the budget, we currently have $19,000 in our cash accounts, so we have funds that we have available to continue to get us through the winter and until we have funds coming in from next year, particularly with the anticipated receivables of these four or five items that I described. And so just to kind of reiterate, with Niall Willis's help, Niall does our accounting. We have divided funds into capital accounts and regular accounts, which affords us the ability to do capital improvement projects and carry over some funds each year, classifying them as capital funds without having to have taxes paid on those because of how we categorized them when we received them. And so I think that strategy is working good for us. And I appreciate all the efforts of the Bradens for their frugality in managing funds here, and they do a good job of approving expenses with the board before they spend almost any funds at all. And appreciate Linda keeping these books in accurate repair so we can have these nice reports. Let's give Larry a hand for that. Yeah, Paul, you want to give a little comment on those roads too?
Past 2 months, I've been spending time grading. I started out slide, worked lower slide all the way up to my ground, and down with Crawford yesterday.
We've been seeing a lot better use out of the grader recently. Appreciate Larry's coaching and previous work and training. And so, okay, we will move on to the election of the board of directors. The board positions are a 2-year position. We change them on alternating years so that we don't end up with a situation where the board is being changed all at once. The carryovers that will continue to be on the board are Shauna Cox, Dale Clarkson, David Turley, who's
coming.
Maybe we'll be here. Dave's done a lot of good work for us. And so we have those 3 board members of our 7 that will be remaining. So we have 4 new board members that will be voted on today from the ballots that have been previously sent in, and also from the votes that will be cast today. And we have invited each of the candidates to stand before us and give us a...
Just so that we don't confuse people, I think what Linda's saying is, you know, there's 4 position movements, but we don't want everybody to vote for us. So we have consistency. Those that have been in balance, those of you that haven't voted, you should still vote for 3 members, and due to representation, then the top 4, I guess, will be put on the board. But just so we don't have some people vote for 3 and some vote for 4.
Very good, Cal.
For 3.
You're going to vote for 3 on your ballots today, as all of the mail-ins did. We've had a resignation of a board member since the ballots were mailed out, and so therefore we will be appointing 4 board members today, but we don't want to give imbalanced voting based on the ones that have already mailed in versus the ones that are present here today. So thank you, Ben. So, Niall.
still one of the votes, yes. I will, if you're here, we will come out and have you cross out one of your votes, but only vote for three, please.
I assume, Niall, any of the mailed-in ones only had three because that's what the instruction was. And so if we find a mailed-in one that only has four votes on it, I'm gonna hope that doesn't happen.
That fourth spot was only announced Wednesday.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it shouldn't be there. And so hopefully we won't have that debate. And if we find that anomaly, then our committee of unbiased representatives will decide what to do with it. So, what?
Kathy
Duvall resigned.
Yes, sir. Under a rock.
Hey, Ken. How are you? Anyone gave me a few to pass out, so I'm sorry.
There are also more financial reports on here if you want to take them home and study them.
So, one thing that's really helpful and exciting is to have board members willing to run in the first place. And I think we really appreciate those that have run and are willing to run. So, we have five or seven candidates. And we'd ask them to stand up in the following order and take about 5 minutes and tell us all the great things they want to tell us. Jody Akers, Robert Allen, Ben Clarkson, Mark Cram, Ryan Dudunsky, Ken Lint, and Michelle Sargent. So without further ado, Jody Akers.
Okay. I'm Jody Akers. I'm lot 128. Been at the ranch probably 7 or 8 years now, and been involved with the board for 2 years. Learned a whole lot. Didn't come into a place on the board until Brent Fulmer resigned, and so I kind of got his duties of road and fire management. I would like to continue to be on the board. My focus is on our water issues and how to protect our assets on the ranch, how to equally distribute them between the members, and how to keep it good. And that would be my focus for doing this and to make sure everything keeps on track and keeps moving along. I think we've done a real good job this year. We've come a long way from where we were at the beginning of this year, and I think it's a good thing. I appreciate your vote.
Thank you, Jody. Robert Allen. Thanks.
I'm Ben Clarkson. This go around, I think I've been on the board for 2 years now. I hope I will continue with it. I don't get to spend as much time as many retired people up here enjoying it, but I do enjoy it when I get up here and get a chance to spend some time. I would like to see, and I'm excited to see so many new faces each year. There's a lot of people who were here last year's annual meeting that aren't here today, and to see the turnover, interest in people that are doing all of them, and it was a long distance, and it's quite a dedicated sacrifice to even be able to be here to some of the meetings and stuff. And so to see new faces and that are, you know, becoming interested and
those that aren't able to be here is an important part of keeping it alive and moving forward. Overall, I'd just like to be involved in continuing to see the ranch improve and maintain as long as we can financially budget it. You know, we're all in economic hard times, and so to maintain the improvements that have been is something I feel is important. But I think that with the planning that has happened the last few years and keeping a slow and steady course in the right direction, we'll make a lot of progress over time. I know I get frustrated. I know there's members that get frustrated that we don't have, you know, that we're not 10 years down the road. But I think that we will get there faster by consistently making progress in the right direction. We get, you know, running too fast, and GSROA as an organization has at times run too fast and fallen on its face, both, you know, leadership-wise, politically, and financially, and then we lose momentum, we lose direction, and I have to kind of start over. And so I'm really pleased with Dirk's leadership and the board where we've been the last 2 years that I've been on it. You know, the work that Dale's been involved in reestablishing, you know, the water resources, the original pioneer ditches, to see, you know, the not only the blessings of water and good rain that we've had this year, but the last 2 years being able to capture that. I came up earlier this week to work with Paul in this project, mowing out the willows and stuff there in the meadow, and to see, you know, in September and late August, to see the amount of water in Half Moon Reservoir and the Pink Reservoir, stuff that hasn't held water for 40 years since I was a kid, is amazing. So I think that, you know, continuing in that direction is super exciting. It's a thing quite difficult with 300 lot owners and different opinions and stuff. Those of you that have been on the board know what kind of a strain it is to kind of represent everybody and work through the differences of opinions and where to place, you know, financial resources and help to direct the management that are here at the ranch and their time and limited time. It's always a huge budget and time commitments just to maintain what we've got. And I think it's time we, you know, let out new areas without maintaining what we had originally, trying to get new things while the existing stuff is falling apart. So to come back and focus on the ranch headquarters and rebuild the infrastructure and where it's maintainable and sustainable for the next generation, I think is important. So with that, I'm happy to, you know, continue to serve and add what knowledge I have and ability in you know, kind of moving that direction. If that meets with your vision and what you want to see, then I, you know, appreciate your vote. If not, I'll come up just retire and then just, you know, camp and fish and enjoy the place and not worry about the stress of it. Thank you. I have been on the board 2 years. I've actually been on the board 3 years, I believe. I was appointed. I filled an appointment and filled 1 year, and then I was elected, I believe, 2 years. I think it's been 3 years that I've been on the board this time.
Along with 20 years before that.
Yeah, I did my tour back in the 90s.
I'm Mark Cram. Like Ben has also said, he's been around for quite some time. So have I. I've been... I used to live and work on the ranch during the summers and even during some of the first part of school years. I think it's been back about 35 years now ago when I first started here at the ranch. I think I had enough about 6 or 7 years that I put in the hard, dedicated work. I know the ranch used to work, how I always envisioned it to work, and I was instrumental, I think, and I... feel real strong as instrumental in helping establish and a lot of the perimeters, the interior, the springs, the cabins. I've seen these all things come about. We've devoted a lot of time and effort out here. We have our family loves to come out here. I see a lack. I feel there's a lack of participation from a lot of the families who were original owners out here at the ranch, that now their children have now acquired the property, and unfortunately some of these guys don't know what's available out here for them to have. would like to see this ranch pick up the interest on the younger generation today and get them involved in what their parents saw back in the days when they first purchased the property. I'm willing to put my total effort in this project here and to serve you well on the board. I feel I'd be a good candidate. Appreciate your vote.
Thank you, Mark. Ryan?
Ryan, you I have vision from what I've seen and your strength. One of the things I am coming up to you guys is I want to work on communication from two-way radio to cell phone coverage and maybe some internet. I feel that's something that I can provide a helping hand with and coordinate a little bit. I haven't been here my whole life, unfortunately. I wish I would have. It's a very beautiful place, and I just want to give the time I do have to make this place a place that earlier families, my family has definitely enjoyed, and I want to make it so future families can enjoy it the way I have. It's just an absolutely beautiful place, and I want to do everything I can to preserve it for future generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Dan Lynn?
I think most of you know me. I've been here since the mid-90s, been involved with most of the things I've been on, going on at the ranch since that time. I'm now retired. I spent a lot of time working on projects and helping put in some of the things that we've added to the ranch, the equipment that we provided that hasn't been here before. I feel very strongly about maintaining the ranch as a rustic and private community. I really don't want to see us go into any kind of a urbanization, or I really hate to see the Scooter Paw cave. I know that I can enjoy peace and quiet at my place and never see a stranger going up down the roads, and that means a lot to me. I really would like to make sure that we make progress and we keep things so that we can all access what we have here and enjoy it to the fullest, to maintain it at that level. And I'm hoping that there's other people that you aren't supporting, and I guess maybe I would be the voice of reason maybe in this whole thing as we go along. You know, like Ben says, I want to make sure that we stay within our budget and that we don't make it so that we get strung out to the point we can't handle things as well as we have in the past. And that's basically where I'm at. I've been on the board before, and I really know what's happening with the ranch, I think, for the most part.
Thanks, Ken. Michelle?
Can I read that?
Yeah, she's got a written statement.
Michelle Sargent is a lot number 83. She says, I have owned a lot since 2007 and have seen a lot of growth at the ranch. I have wanted to be involved with the board since last year during elections so that she was on the ballot last year, so that I could be hands-on with the other members to make the ranch a place that we will all want to get away to. I envision ranch becoming a peaceful getaway where we can come to enjoy the outdoors, our kids play on ATVs or dirt bikes, and the wonderful nature that the ranch has to offer. I hope to work with the board and make decisions about what the owners would like to see done at the ranch to make their home little vacation spot. I would like to be involved in fixing up the cabins and maybe improving some of the roads so that all the owners have year-round access. Michelle Sargent.
Okay, very good. Again, appreciate those that are willing to run. And now it's time for voting. Does everybody have the papers they need to do their voting? If not, will you raise your hand and Linda will help you with that?
Anybody else need ballots? Got theirs?
I think ask Linda, but I would think so.
Yeah.
That's right.
Not be dug it up. need a help.
Okay. No, it's not. There's actually a group in Montana that takes about 10 days to train cattle. These.
two places in the county where it's at, but I haven't tackled that problem yet because it's a place in yard and they grow it for medicinal reasons. So I haven't brought myself to that point yet. The A. And those are ones that are, a lot of them we don't even have in the county. So you want to keep them out. You know, they're a small population. They're a controllable population in Utah right now. That's how they categorize them. C is work on cutting it down, and if B is work on cutting it down, and C is try not to let it get any bigger. So.
And what does it cost if you want it sprayed on your own property?
$75. Well, the county, the weed board came, the county's got a weed board, and one of the commissioners that's on the weed board, that's actually Doug Eaton, the commissioner over the weeds, and they've come up with a price, and it's a really cheap price. If you're up to 4 hours, $75. If I'm over there for more than 4 hours, it's $150.
That doesn't include time to get out here, right?
No, not me. Well, yeah, it takes a long time.
Yeah,
no, not really, but I mean,
you're a bunch
if
of
I
work.
Go out and somebody's got 20 acres, I've got to spend the whole day, and that's $150, and that doesn't even cover two tanks of chemicals. They'll eat up $150 easily. Okay, I mean, they did that trying to get, you know, give people a break and help people get on board with how important not just weeds are. And it's, I mean, it's billions of dollars of loss in agricultural and even recreation. Case in point, down the road here at the Sheep Creek or Yellow Creek, right there by the dam where that road goes on, hiking trail right there. There's cameras there for, you know, pain control. Well, we had a lot of hikers complaining, you know what? Just tired of cows being there because there's cow crap in the trail. Okay? You know?
Oh, okay.
Out there, they shut it down from cows for a while. I think it was 1 year. The hikers come back and say, hey, we can't get through the trail, but man, it's too thick. But don't get rid of the cameras, you can get rid of the cows. The cows were the ones that were keeping those trails open for the hikers. So, you know, it's what do you do? Yes, it will. Most of the spray I use is a broadleaf killer, and it will kill virtually all broadleaf. No, the chemical I use kills the weeds.
Yeah,
don't doubt about that. Man.
I see Johnson grass. So is that a broadleaf?
No, but I have different chemicals for grass. Yeah. But mostly what I do is the stuff for broadleaf.
Can you tell me which of the
commissioners
is over the Mill Creek Weed Board?
Yeah! MJ!
It's not in the book.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. What's he going to feel like?
Commissioner Hayden.
After all, there's places.
You know, and you know what? That's crazy because I spend a lot of time spraying weeds up in Milk. And, but the thing is, on that piece, there's a gate block, and nobody's ever reported any noxious weeds.
I can give a little bit of an update. That is actually one of my responsibilities.
Dirk is over that. He's over the sheriff's department. For those that don't know, they just did a big marijuana bust with illegal aliens over in Mill Creek. You know, and around town, you know, everybody's talking about, hey, the marijuana growers out in Deer Springs, you know. But they did haul out several thousand plants, and, you know, the sheriff's department called me and said, hey, we've got to have permission to land helicopters on the airstrip for a issue that we're working with, and I didn't know for sure, but I said, hey, you know, we'll cooperate for something that's in the, you know, public safety and good, so, you know, I'll let all know to not worry. So, yeah, Sunday morning, I think they land a couple helicopters up here and stage that issue, which in these other areas is, you know, my big concern is, you're talking a couple of $1 million of drugs. So if you were out hiking the Underwood Trail or anything, $11 million. You stumble on some of those, and I've got friends that have been involved in some of those kind of things. You know, these guys don't have a problem with putting a bullet in your head. It keeps you quiet. So it's very important, you know, and dangerous to mess with. So those areas that have had some of these that have been on federal ground or even on private, but areas that nobody knows, and pipe into some springs where they have good shade and water and they can grow marijuana, you know, good. It's a super dangerous thing. It's something that we need to, you know, always be kind of on the lookout for something that doesn't look right. This same drug cartel, it's been over, they've done big busts over St. George on Pine Valley Mountain. This was part of the same group, and that's how they, you know, captured, you know, people, Dirk made no more, and had tipped them off that there was something out here in Kane County.
I'm sorry I can't talk very loud, so you'll have to listen extra hard. The county is trying to do some educational stuff to deal with basically the public safety awareness associated with these types of illegal activities. Our county has not historically had a lot of issues with this, but given that these drug cartel folks coming primarily out of Mexico are invading our areas, and particularly some of the properties that we seem to have some unique aspects for, we may see some more of it. So this is the kind of thing that they're basically finding is common with these. A property that is not accessible to the public. So number one. So almost the perfect scenario is federal ground that's behind private property, where the private property owner isn't really doing a lot of active management of their property. And so, you know, that was the case in Mill Creek. They'd gone up behind some private property that had a locked gate, and you know, infiltrated back in those areas. Secondly, where there's some water, some springs, some runoff, where they can get watered all summer long. So that's kind of a criteria to look for. This issue was found because a rancher reported some odd things that he saw: trash bags on the side of the road, and some footprints that he saw that somebody had raked out. And so he thought, man, that's really odd. Why would somebody actually be trying to cover up footprints? And they were just, you know, walking off the side of a dirt road. And so those caused him to kind of think. Other signs are when you see, you know, the black tubing that might be being used for drip systems or to tie into a spring or something, you know, when you might be hiking along out in the middle of nature and you come across a piece of black tubing laying on the ground or something, you know, obviously that's a really strange thing, especially on public ground. And so the best thing would be to report something like that to the sheriff's office rather than to Larry Clarkson it yourself, because I know Larry would, if he ran across something like that, he couldn't resist just reporting it, I think. That'd probably be the problem there. I actually ran across you know, a situation like this that I reported. They're really good to to research it, and in the case that I reported, it wasn't an illegal grow, but it you know, had all the makings that looked like it was. So the biggest problem that they've had in almost all these cases, they've confiscated the grow areas, but not the individuals that were involved in it. And so over here there were 9 to 12 individuals. They had surveillance that they'd watched them actually for weeks, and so they knew who they were. They were, you know, Hispanic individuals. They could tell when their supply trucks had come in and out and what was going on, and they tried to set up. They had over 150 law enforcement officers in the valley, and they didn't catch a single one of them. And part of that is just because they actually got within about 30 feet of them at one time, but these guys are scampering, wild, scared to death. They know that they're going to be in for a lot of time behind bars. And what's that? Yeah, 3 helicopters. And you know, our law enforcement guys, I mean, they're all weighed down with their flak jackets and everything else, and you get in a running battle. Part of how these guys escaped is they basically jumped off some heavy drop-off cliff areas that they thought that they were going to be able to trap them to, and these guys, rather than surrender, just took the jumps off and rolled and tumbled, and they said it was quite a sight, but, you know, they were then off and out of there, and it wouldn't take too much to get in a thick wooded area where you could hunker down and hide for days, and if you needed to. And so they really hoped in this case to catch somebody, because they had caught somebody in the others that were involved in southern Utah, not in our county. And so that's why they had spent, you know, a number of weeks really trying to figure out their movement patterns and everything. And still they were, I guess they had a really good learning experience. But you know, I think the main safety risk is these individuals did have weapons. They probably wouldn't be looking to be aggressive or out doing anything, but if they felt that somebody stumbled onto them out there, I think that there would be a high risk. And so we are concerned about that, so we need to watch for those things. We need to watch, you know, if you're a lot owner and stuff and you start seeing, you know, this little pickup truck or whatever coming up every 2 weeks, and you're wondering, gee, what's kind of odd, what's going on there. You know, those are the things that look suspicious. Just kind of be aware of that. Report them. You can talk to Paul and see if he knows about those activities, and Paul knows how to get a hold of our local sheriff. So that's a little bit of update. Are there any questions on that? When you leave the pavement as you're coming up to the ranch from Johnson Canyon, about 4 miles in, you cross through the Scudamore Ranch there, where a gravel pit is right there to the side of the road. The Mill Creek Road, where they were up, is immediate left right there. So it in effect is one canyon over from our part of this canyon of the ranch, and they were on the east side of that canyon, so they were fairly close to the ranch.
They were actually in Tinney, which is part of Mill Creek, which is water canyon, but one old sure. Pipeline. They
sure.
Sure. Pretty light.
Here. I heard, do you have any of those? Because I have the original that came back. Oh. Can I visit with you for just a moment? I'm sorry to interrupt you. down there right now? What's going on? Why is all of a sudden that thing kicked up full bore and they tore the road the hell out of that weird thing?
They're using that for on the road construction. That's what I'm saying. They had 24 hours a day there for a while. That was part of their contract.
They can do anything extra gold with that?
There have been a lot of extra things already.
I came there a couple of weeks ago, and there's literally 4 or 5 inch mold. I don't know if the several trucks didn't make all the way down there with them.
I wouldn't doubt that those belly dumpers occasionally have a leak. So since I didn't see any of them today, I guess they got cleaned up.
Water that road frequently when they were drawing from that years ago. This time they weren't. I've had times when the trucks pass you, they have to come to a stop. If you can't see anything, probably 5 minutes, 30 seconds, or wherever it is, you know.
Yeah.
Completely lost in a cloud.
I think if you have issues, you can call them in right then. It's helpful. The law enforcement has been out here. They ticketed guys. They've had discussions with their meetings, and I think it's made a difference. They've done some watering. They've done a variety of things, but I'm sure it will always be an issue that there will be an occasional reminder needed, and that will be helpful. Carl, anything else for you?
Up here that I know of is Torrey Crest. We do have some down there by Adams Wash and by the mouth of Timber Mountain, and then on the other side, right there at the Lafever Ranch, right there. That was a real tough one to kill. I don't know that it has anything in there. Nothing will eat it. It's just. It's not poisonous. It's just. It'll take over. And when it gets into an alfalfa field, the thing is, when it first comes up, it looks like it just looks exactly like alfalfa sprouting. Before you know it, you got the white flowers, okay? Right at the mouth of Johnson Canyon. Just to the east a little bit. The rancher, he came out and said, well, I got a little bit of white coffee on it, and he could spray it around the edges of my alfalfa field. This was when I started 6 years ago. And so he says, but don't touch my alfalfa. I'm like, all right, I'm not. Well, it was 2 years ago, he called me back and said, you know what, I got my alfalfa, whatever you got to do, you got to get rid of that. So I actually sprayed probably 18 acres of his 40 acres of alfalfa, because that white cow moved in, and it just wiped out everything else, and it, there was nothing but white cow was growing. And that one takes 2 to 3 years to get rid of. It's an extremely tough one. Knapweed. I'm talking about up here. And knapweed is really freaking an incredible plant. It's got its own built-in wheat. It actually puts off a chemical when it's growing into the soil that will kill the predator as you can. It's amazing. But the county will put notices in the paper the 1st of May and a couple of papers, you know, that it's weed time and it's time to control your noxious weed. Everybody calls me and says, oh, you got a problem over here. And in all reality, I don't have the problem. I mean, it's the property owner's responsibility. That's what the law states. It's the property owner's responsibility to take care of the weed. Okay? It's my job to see that it gets done, either by the property owner or by me coming in. And I'd much rather
come in by you saying, calling me up and saying, hey, I've got some weeds here. Come take care of them. I'll be right there as soon as I can. I'll come get the weeds. I don't want to have the weed board and commission send you a notice for failure to control them. And then I come in and control them against your will. And then you get charged what it actually costs to do it. And for the machinery that I use, they figure $77 an hour for me to spray weeds. So, and then they come on top of that. So, you know.
I had my flagging cleared 3 or 4 months ago. And now they are back, and they are 10 times taller, 10 times taller.
Toxic weeds and weeds in the jungle love to disturb ground. And you clear ground, if you don't put something back in it that is good, the weeds are going to come in. Okay? That's just the way it is. The very best weed control you can use in your yard is a healthy weed.
I'll announce C and D are just together.
Any other questions? If you have any questions, you know, if you can't out about on the property, either phone call or yeah, call them using my number or the broken number. If you have any questions, and don't hesitate to
my question is it possible to get chemicals and treat it yourself?
Yeah, you can. There is chemical that you can buy over the counter.
No, I mean in the camp.
No. The chemical that I use, you have to have a license. A pesticide applicator license? Okay, you have to have a Utah State pesticide applicator license. Okay? It's really easy. It's 100 times easier for you as a private individual to go and get your license than it is for me. And every 3 years, you need 6 credits for your license new. Every 3 years, I need 24. So.
But even if you have your license, you still can't buy from the county.
Yeah, no.
That just allows you to buy the same thing in a stronger dose. So, yeah. You know, because the best thing is the 2,4-D generic brand from IFA.
Yeah,
you read the label and mix it, and, you know, DIRF or Fall can tell you, you know, the board, we did buy a 25-gallon sprayer that Paul can put on the back of the Rhino. And so that's where, overall, what we're trying to do is, where we're losing the battle at Deer Springs is timing. And so if you know and we have big areas that we can identify and you know, coordinate so that when Carl comes up, we can hit a bunch of the big areas before they go to seed. If they're smaller areas, if we know about it and we work out something, especially if it's on your lot, maybe there's a small fee or cost sharing or pay for the chemical, and Paul comes and handles it. Because if we get these thistles specifically that I've dealt with in a lot of areas, at the right time early enough, we can knock them down. The problem is we keep waiting until you see a purple flower, and then even then you spray it, it still has enough pulp in the stem to put out those seeds, and every year it's purple. Yeah, so exactly 2 days, it'll come up and flower on the ground the first year, and the second year send it up. If we can start shoveling, you know, they are highly susceptible to the shovel.
Yeah,
you know,
if you shovel them, under the ground. Otherwise, it comes off at ground level, like I said, it'll just spread out. But that's just a will, man. If a robot comes
Carl, what's your phone number?
You can get a hold of me at
615-435-1688.
435-616-1688.
Carl Gurr.
G-E-R.
G-U-R-R. Alias the Gurr Man.
But not the one up Mill Creek. So, if you got any questions, get a hold of Paul or call me on my phone. And
Carl, think if you have a question,
you think, oh man, if something, you see something growing that you've never seen before, call me. Because that's when you. That's the best time to find out about something new is when it first happens. Because with this Scotch thistle, they think it started up in Thompson Wash. Years ago, one of the farmers up there was a deer camp that came from California, camped up there. That year, the guy came, some thistle. The next year, he came a few more. By the fourth year, it covered like 25 acres. Go to that. Oh, it will do good, because as long as the rosettes. Once they flowered, no. But in the fall, that's when you get the rosettes coming up, and that they'll start with little two leaves, and then they'll come up to a, like 8 or 10 or 12 leaves, just in a little rosette shape. And that's actually the good time to kill them, because it takes a whole lot less chemical than once they start to fold.
And with all of the rain we're having right now, what do you do? Is that going to wash it all off?
No, the chemical that I use, and that's how I use it, because I get a little sick satisfaction. I'll start in the morning, and by noon, they're dying. I mean, you see them tipping over. Within a couple of hours, you'll start to see those leaves just curl up on the rosettes, and that's, it makes me feel good when I can leave, and as I'm leaving, those things are tipping over, dying. I really feel good. Sorry, but I'm just like, God, I like to see that.
Let's give Carl a hand. Okay, and next item on the agenda is the Vance screen. Vance.
You want to move that over closer to the side?
I'm just going to invite them to come see it, I think, when I'm done.
I'm Van Green. I live on the other side of the airstrip. We bought in 2004 because we wanted a full year-round access. People live here if we wanted to. Once we got all the plumbing issues squared away, we began to cross the issues of trying to get a phone to work. Number one, and then other things that they came along this year. And I kind of got sucked into trying to get some communications going on. Even the ranch house at that point had a lot of communications. We weren't able to get anything going on out there. And it was kind of an unsafe deal because we had no real way to get back to town except to kind of old hokey radio telephone thing. And it worked okay, but it wasn't really what we needed. So started on the phone, figured out some of the stuff that was going on. I'm not going to get into great detail here. What I'd like you to do is, after we're done with all this messing around and having our lunch, if you have a specific question, just come talk to me and we'll go over it. But we made real good progress on the phone until the last couple of years when everything changed again. A bunch of people merged and sold and I was getting questions about, well, what did I used to do, stop working. We're in the process of sort of figuring that out again. The short version is,
the new map with the darker, the denser color on the right-hand side
are the only spots out here where you can possibly get a phone to work, and that requires an external amplifier, and a big hawk and antenna like this on the ranch house. You can't really see it from here, but one of those looks like a ladder on the side. 18 feet right now. Verizon people? Oh, they're in the middle of trying to figure out, they're even hopeless in Phoenix right now. They transitioned so much stuff so quickly, threw it all out there and said, come sign up with us, we're the best, we're the fastest, and they're neither right now. They're really messed up. So we're sort of figuring out it from scratch. I stayed with Verizon, and I smooth as silk all the way through. Nothing has changed for me out here. Still works, same signal level from the same place. That could all change tomorrow. But I did a little, finally got some research from the FCC where the towers are, who's operating them, what the transmitting power is, made the map. So we have a little bit more than we had in the past. It still requires, there are places where you can get a bare phone to work. Try the same place next week, won't work, may work again. It does. No antenna. Just a phone in your hand. Yeah.
You wanted to get one of those.
Yeah. Got some paws and ears on it.
You know, I can get
That's part of the whole transition thing.
Yeah.
AT&T picked up Singular's old towers to get coverage here. And it'll be probably a bigger mess when they do that, because they haven't integrated what they've got. And one other thing that works, that makes a huge difference, is don't let them upgrade you to a new phone, unless it's broken. The old phones are the best. They have antenna jacks that work, the new ones don't. And they keep trying to do this. They'll email you every 6 months. Oh, you're due for an upgrade. Don't do it unless the phone is broken or there's some other reason. You've got to have an external jack, and almost none of them do. We've had some luck with the little repeater-style amplifiers. Bob Becker has one that works well for him. Other people have tried. We tried it here at the ranch house. It was a total waste. It didn't work at all. So that, you know, it still requires, if you have a cabin on your lot or a camper or a tent trailer or whatever, you've got something permanent, you need to go with a big pole and a big antenna and an amplifier to make it work, and that'll all set you back about $300 is what it amounts to these days. It's come down quite a bit. It used to be a lot more than that. And it's still it's one of those things you just have to try. I've got an antenna that I loan out to people, like that one, on a pole. And right now the drivers are using it because they're fighting this same issue, trying to get what used to work again. So you take it out on your lot and try to figure out where you can make it work. That's available. So if somebody wants to use that at some point, let me know. And I keep it up here for people to get at it.
I don't
have to. We'll have to look at the map when we have time.
Okay.
I don't have them all memorized,
It's good reception there, even with AT&T.
Yeah. If you've already got good reception, having an external antenna will just make it that much more reliable. You're less likely to drop a call. What seems to be happening with a lot of the people have good signals but no coverage is that AT&T hasn't worked out, or whoever you're with, hasn't worked out roaming agreements with the people you're getting the signal from.
Yeah, and your phone sticks to that one.
Yeah. Now, one thing that has worked is the good old StarQ28 gig. Now, whether that works on all phones anymore, that's what's called updating your roaming profile. You need to ask your people before you come here, because when you get here, obviously you're not going to be able to get through to them anymore, whether that is something you should try. Some of the newer phones don't support it. It worked really well on the old phones. We'd come from Arizona, things wouldn't work. StarQ28 would fix almost all of them. Won't fix the signal problem, but it will fix the I'm not getting my voice message alerts anymore problem, things like that. Yeah?
Is the internet more reliable and available than telephone service?
Here? I have better coverage here. Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. at the whole. Oh, you mean over the phone or the one we have running here separately? Well, there's two flavors of it. The one you can get with your phone, and then the one that we have set up that we're actually sourcing ourselves from here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, right.
So it's great for people that have smartphones.
Yeah. No, we'll get to that in a minute. We have some real severe limitations because we're on satellite here. Satellite uplink, raw throughput of a satellite uplink is half of dial-up. And you can't Skype hardly anything except a little bit of voice at that rate. Yeah. I've been trying to find out, Phil Hall, when I set him up with internet, and we're kind of getting off the phone thing, but there wasn't a lot more to say. Basically, the phone thing is look at the map. If it looks like you can get it, you'll have to get the little adapter for your phone, and there's places to get that on the internet. Wilson Antennas sells them. They're about $16. Then you can try the antenna and see what happens. Don't invest any more money at that point because you may have just thrown away $17 for all you know and just try it. And then go from there. Because we have a lot of people. Joe and Candy, you still have the tons of bars and no calls problem?
Yeah.
They've had it for years. I mean, if you go to their place and look at their view, you can. I mean, you're looking all the way into New Mexico almost. And they've had tons of signal. I brought my old Altel phone up there. I can make calls just holding it. See? Yeah. But Altel got absorbed by Verizon. And mine still works down here. Yeah, Val.
Star 19.
That one I'm not aware of. Roaming agreement stuff.
Yeah,
it's just politics.
The nice thing about a Yagi, though, is, you know, that was my problem for a long time, and I finally found a Verizon tower that I could direct the Yagi to, and when I went through the Yagi, then it completely canceled out all the other signals.
Yeah, it gets stuck, just like he's saying. If you manage to make a call on it once, and then you want off. One thing that does seem to make a big difference, Ole used to have a lot of trouble with his phone, and we used to do the master reset on it, which is turn it off, take the battery out. Try to turn it on, because that's key, because it'll still hold. There's a little bit of charge in there on some components. Trying to turn it on without a battery will clear that. Wait about 5 minutes, put the battery back in. It may or may not work for that.
The Star 19, what I understand, is if you have a tower that you have to get a signal to, or from, take a call from, you have Star 19 and you can log in on that tower.
Have you tried it? What does it say to you when you try it? Because I know that on the Star 228 they were pretty specific about telling you what was going to happen. You did it. Really? Okay. Well, I'll follow up on it.
Yeah. And this is
free calls. Is it scratchy or good today?
It works.
Yeah. On voice only.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you try to do a video, it'll pop a hairball and tell you what will happen. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people have been able to make it work. But don't count on it. If you're really up here, yeah. Yeah, it can go away. But what I was getting at is there's a, and I don't know what the name of it is, Phil's son showed it to me. There's a, what amounts to on smartphones, there's an app that turns them into walkie-talkies. Not real time. It's one back and forth. That works great here because it doesn't try to get through in real time. It waits to send your voice, whatever you just said, until the system is unblocked, for lack of a better way of putting it. We use that, and that works. It stores it forward.
More like a text.
Yeah, it works really good up here. Because, and you may send something, like, you know, hi mom, I'm at the ranch, and you may not hear a response for almost 2 minutes. That's because it's trying to find a way through.
but it works pretty well. And it doesn't break up because it's not trying to maintain that stream. And I can't remember what the name of it is. I'm still trying to find out. You know, maybe... I'd like to find out about it. Yeah. I don't have a smartphone...
Emergency purposes.
Yeah, I don't have a smartphone to try it on because I'm adhering to the... What I said about the old phones.
Yeah.
I've got... I bought 5 old Kyocera 3250s on eBay for $25 about 3 years ago. I'm not on number 2. They've said they won't activate an old phone, but I think you guys got them to do it.
You know, we just went in and they just moved the number to an old phone.
Right. Now, they'll say their official line is no, no, no. You have to make your case for being at a place like this. And it's hard because you're usually in a showroom with a kid with an earring who just totally does not understand what you're talking about. And it's hard to get the point across. I can't really offer any advice there except that somebody told me that the Verizon place in Cedar next to the Home Depot was pretty good at it at one point. But of course, they're no longer the providers here. So there you go. It's a hard thing. We'll switch to the internet, which is actually a little easier because we have control of that out here. We're using the RAM Starman. And you can look at the app if you have an interest in this. It has this up way up. And it's all because this man right here let us put an antenna on a high hill near his place. Big hand for Fred Searle letting us do that. Because without him, there are other places, but they're not nearly as accessible. We can drive our stuff to this place on a quad or on a truck. Any other place would have to walk it, set it up. And we're talking car batteries and, you know, all kinds of fun things to move around. From the setup we have here, if you've stayed in the cabin for the last year and a half, couple of years, you've noticed that it's here. You probably noticed that it's not anywhere as fast as you got at home, and then I printed up a thing that says, don't play games, don't watch video. You just can't do that, and the reason for that is that we have a limit. Satellite limits you. The way they keep it affordable is they say you can only do so much a month, or we're going to cut your speed down to the point where you can't really do anything until you clear that limit. So we have to be careful, but when you come out here, you're not really here to do anything except maybe check email. Check the weather. Don't park yourself on it and just mess with it all evening. Do that when you get home, and then we'll all be fine. We hit the limit, what, twice? Once last 4th of July, somebody started streaming Sirius, which is a satellite radio service, which you can also get off the internet, and then they started playing World of Warcraft at the same time. We were through our limit in 2 hours, shut these guys down to a speed they could barely do anything. So that's the kind of stuff we want to avoid, and since then we've had no issues. So there are limitations on it. But I've currently got 5 people set up kind of like what I've got over here, and you can visit with me on how that all works. Hooked to the system with more or less permanent installations who have cabins and stuff. Use it for email. A lot of us have set up remote webcams to look at our property while we're not here. Can't do video, but you can still image in as often as you want because it uses almost no bandwidth to do that. I've got 3 of the cameras on the high point set up to do motion detection. I get neat things like lightning strikes and all kinds of weird stuff going on. And the one at my place, I get people building snowmen on my path for fun. My neighbor did that last January. And hummingbirds. There's a little red light that you can turn off on most cameras, but I leave it on because I'm too lazy to get in there and turn it off. And the hummingbirds are interested in that. So I've got several images of them hovering around the front. So they're useful that way for not even when you're not even here. So it's we can again you can look at the maps. That's the more pinkish one. The lighter colored one in the middle is our internet coverage, which way exceeds our phone coverage. But that's because we can do something about that. I can go out and find spots to put up stations that make sense. AT&T, everybody else, we're stuck with whatever they give us. The cell people are putting in, they came through, and I saw it in the paper, they went through and I don't know if this was a city thing, Dirk, or it was a county thing where they went before and got those two sites approved.
Yeah,
Yeah, and but they're south, like way south, and I don't know if they'll ever clear the first step of the cliff to help us, but that's a couple of years off. We'll have to see how it goes. I don't know if any of you noticed on emails, but right now, people who can't be here are watching us with that camera on the tripod back there. They can still in and see what we're doing. Just for fun. Just for the day. Yeah. Just to show it's kind of a interesting thing to do. Anyway, I'm going to cut that off because we've got other stuff. If you have specific questions, I'll be around. We can walk up, look at the map. I've got some information on how that stuff all connects. Short version on getting it at your place, you need 12 volts. You need more or less line of sight to one of the places where I've got the equipment set up. Doesn't have to be perfect line of sight. You need to find a spot through the trees. And you need a couple hundred bucks. It's pretty cheap.
Talk about the passwords for the internet.
In order to force people to come and get the password so that we can review the rules about what you do and don't do, there's a horrible 26-digit key you got to enter to get on. And the reason we originally started not doing that, and then we had the issue with the guy playing games all night because he could, and he didn't know that he wasn't. We really don't want that to happen. So we put the key on. Paul has little slips of paper with it. If you think you're going to, you know you're going to be here and you want it beforehand, email us. And we can email it to you. And you can get all set up for you to get here. And just keep it, plug it in when you get here. I'd like to run it without a key, but we really do need people to understand our situation before they just get on and do what they normally do at home. You know, start, dig out the iPod, hook it up, download a whole bunch of music. You know, no, don't do that here. Do that at home before you get here. Yeah, Sean. Go ahead, Carl. Little box that sits there. You basically become your own cell site. It's a neat thing. It works good and fits. Yeah, I wish it would work here. Yeah. I didn't know there were actually, I saw it on their website. The guy at the store didn't know anything about it. Down in Phoenix. I asked him about it. I'm glad they're pushing it. It's a good idea. Or back cellular one. You know, my back phone, those things work great out here. And then cut those off. Yeah, I still got two of them. Yeah. Sell them to the drug cartels, they love them. All of them in the world, places I've never heard of.
So. Yeah, there's a radio called the Rhino. I learned it works out there pretty well. But,
I for one, appreciate Manny's diligence and then, yep. Allowing you to come down and gone back home because, you know, you gotta shoot an email or you have work to do to
right.
Take care of online. And, I think Ryan does homework, his wife does homework, and works here in the store. We have a little table set up, and it's, I sure appreciate it. I'd like to give Manny a hand.
point, that's, I got requests because I would tell people with their cell phones. Can we get, if I can get email, I run a small business myself, so I know I can stay there for 3 or 4 more days if I can answer a few emails. You know, and if people can stay here 3 or 4 more days,
that's what it's about.
That's what it's about. So.
Thank you.
Dig me up later on.
Okay, I'm going to turn some time over to Dale for item C and D on the agenda to talk about ranch ideas and some presentations that he's going to make. We're about a half an hour behind schedule, but Dale's part will be about a half an hour. Then we will announce the results of the vote, and then we will have lunch. After we have lunch, then the new board will convene for their first board meeting. Dale.
There's a lot of discussion here last year on Meadow Canyon Springs. Some of you are acquainted with the Red Reservoir in this area. The old family cabin here. There are two large springs out in that middle, and we talked about controlling them, boxing them, and doing a pipeline from there down to the fish pond area, and this would provide a new adequate water source for the four upper cabins. And so that's kind of phase one. Eventually, that water might be put into an 80,000-gallon tank for a year-round supply, with the surplus coming into the Red Reservoir to keep it alive and safe, rather than coming down the meadow area. The water, there's too much water in most areas. We haven't really done anything with it for the last 30 years, so it kind of bogs down, and growing grasses that are really not as good for livestock as it could be.
Yeah, how much does that spring produce?
The engineer guessed that it might produce around 50 gallons a minute, which is a big water supply. In the 70s, we found that the Finley family had not filed on these springs. As such, they had water on down. So we filed and got the state engineer to identify a particular water right there. And then it went dead for 20 years, 30 years. 4 or 5 years ago, I found that it had not been recorded in the state. I did happen to file the history and met with the state engineer. And they said, oh, yeah, gee, you have the documentation. And so they've gone ahead and approved the spring water there, Four Deer Springs, 134 acre feet, which is one of the largest water rights on the ranch. So that's documented. The water's there. We're talking about now doing the human involvement that's necessary to make that water available. To have good spring water available on a gravity flow basis to many of the lots in the area will be a great asset. It does need planning and some other things. Vance Green has prepared this excellent map from the information that we produced. It tells here about the system. I'd like to have this over here on the wall so all of you can read it, so you have the facts, you know where it is. You should go into the wet meadow and look at the spring areas. I hope all of you will see the reservoirs and things that have with the flow of water that's unusual this year. But to do that, rather than taking time, I'd like for you to take a look at this privately. Mary, I'd like you to come up and look at this other map that you and Vance Green have put together.
If you have the tank, you have to pump to the tank.
You will have to pump to the tank. So we need to either talk about solar or whatever is necessary to get that up. Larry. This is this. Can you pull back the slide up? And this one.
Vance produces, which is pretty awesome, with the pictures that show water flowing down the ditch bank that fills what we call the hidden reservoir, and most of you have tended to ask, where is the hidden reservoir? How many know where the hidden reservoir is? How many knew where that was 5 years ago? How many knew where it was? Well, there's a few like Niall and Val, Mark, some of us have known where that is for years, but most ranch owners have driven by it 100, 200, 1,000 times, never knew where it was. I filled it to capacity and overran it twice this year. It's part of what we're going to, I guess we're going to call the old Finley irrigation system, which really wasn't the Finley irrigation system. In fact, that's the camera that's turned off. Vance just gave me today this copy of the proof of appropriation of water, which I thought was pretty darn cool because it reflects almost 100 years of water on the ranch. This was done in 1919, but it goes back and tells about the diversion. Construction of work was completed July 15th of 1914. It begun June 1st of 1913. This was a diversion that took water out of just below. This blue line that's on here is the diversion that takes water out of Meadow Canyon, Meadow Creek, along a ditch bank. This is the ditch bank pouring water either earlier this year or last year when Vance took a picture of it, into the hidden reservoir. This is actually the point of diversion of water out of the same reservoir area or Meadow Canyon. You can also collect Crawford Canyon, the big reservoir and diversion that's over there that probably all of you don't know about, with the exception of five. This took water out of those sources to actually irrigate land along the upper portion of Broad Hollow and Meadow Canyon where they join, and along the Meadow Canyon side of Leaf Springs. And all of these old ditches, dams, diversions. Earlier this year, I started a chart that started basically dealing with Meadow Canyon, which is Meadow Canyon down through Deer Springs Wash. And I plotted and named every source, each location, what it did, and where it fed to. And just I'll run through that real fast just to tell you that. Also still needs to be done on more of the Broad Hollow area, the Slide Canyon area, the Podunk, which all creates our whole overall system. But in the Meadow Canyon drainage, more or less, there are four water sources now that feed the Red Reservoir. Have all of you seen Red Reservoir this year? I mean, it's a lake, and it's been full to capacity since February. And it's from this year and from last year. Prior to that, it had not held more than the area of water that we're sitting in right here for probably 10 years. And before that, we fixed it once and it got a little water, but 20 years, 30 years, it was basically a dry lake bed 90% of the time. The hidden reservoir has been dry for 30 years. Half Moon Reservoir has been silted in and dry, with the very few exceptions, for 30 years. The Half Moon and Moon Reservoir, well, I'll tell you how this all works. This is fed, the Red Reservoir is fed from Bear Spring and the Bear Spring Pond that you drive along the edge of the road. There's an iron gate drainage that flows, and it's been running this year, every day of the year so far, still running today. Right along the edge of our iron gate and comes under the road and feeds the new channel we created over at the Red Reservoir. That did not exist years ago because all of the flow came down through what I call the big pine drainage, where the big pine trees are, where Doug Hunt, the Longhorn Man, has his RV park. Most of the flow out of the forest came down right there until 10, 12 years ago up in the forest. The floods filtered in and changed area and shifted all of our flow over to the east further and started flooding out the road and the iron gate. So Bear Spring, the iron gate flow, the big pine flow, and Pipeline Canyon, four areas feed the Red Reservoir. The Red Reservoir has now been strengthened, built, and changed. We have a good head gate and diversion in it. I need to finish a little work there, but the head gate lets water out of the reservoir into the west portion of the upper meadow. The overflow from the reservoir feeds the east portion of the upper meadow by way of a ditch that's following the contour of the ground, so we can let water out of it, run it the full length, or cut it off short, and water, spread the water out as we need to use it. That water then, also from the Red Reservoir, leaks water down through the ground. And if you go into that whole upper area, it's not flooding or running somewhere, but everywhere. It's just a big oozing all across, but it's in a way that is actually being beneficial rather than detrimental. And that area, I think, can be planted and be beautiful and usable for cattle feed and everything else. The meadow kind of filters down through, and we have two big good springs and then two other big holes in the ground that feed water, and part of that is just being fed from the reservoir. The meadow flows on down and begins to collect again in a couple areas that we still need to work on, but then on down toward the trout pond areas, there's a diversion above the trout pond that controls the flow into the trout pond. Or we can shut it off there and it diverts around in case, you know, big floods shouldn't go through our ponds and silt them in, so we send it around. We also created a fourth pond, which is just a catchment. The more you can catch and retain water, the better it is for livestock, for wildlife, and for the ground. You're feeding the water, aquifer, and it's benefiting everything downstream. So the more we can hold and increase our carrying capacity, the better we are. We've been dry for 30, 35 years, and we see the result on downstream of dry. The more we capture and hold, the better it benefits everything. So it goes through the three trout ponds, on down through Meadow Canyon to this diversion here, which takes it out to the hidden reservoir. Crawford Canyon, up here, right in the middle of Lot 109, there's a diversion that sends water down another hidden. Does everybody know where the big canal is that comes out of Crawford Canyon? How many of you knew that there was one there? My sister Loretta and I and a guy named Lynn Siemens were taking cows from the meadow over to Podunk and got caught in the middle of the night, dark, couldn't see our way. Unsaddled our horses, left the saddles and bridles stacked in the middle of a clearing that we thought we could find back sometime the next day. Kick me off. I think I was 10
or 11.
Hiked back through the oak because we couldn't get through on the horses, so we just left them. And they found their way back. But we walked through the night, and about midnight the full moon came up and lit it up so we could kind of see our way. By 2 o'clock we had made it across the Crawford Burn area back to Meadow Canyon. But in the process we had come across this giant, what at the time to me seemed like this giant canal. I mean, big. I was going, wow, what is this? And I asked my dad, and he said, I have no idea. Well, if you haven't hiked through there, and it's harder now to see it than it did then, but it's still there, and it's still, this year alone, well, over the past 3 years, I've worked on getting this ditch reestablished enough to flow water. And I filled that reservoir, the last 3 years, partially and completely, and this year it's been to the top where it's actually run over twice. I've redone the ditch that comes along the hillside here to run and irrigate this well field from the Half Moon Reservoir, which that's been 20 years since it was even possible. And because this is in the monument, I haven't really ventured into there, but I've been talking with them, and we still do have, even though it's the monument, there are people that have gone in and redone ditch banks and those kind of things. It has to be done the right way so we don't go to prison, but it would be nice to be able to rerun that water from Stauffer's giant reservoir hidden over here, right here. It's clearing right here. It's a big reservoir. That water from Stauffer's comes to that reservoir along a canal that leads through here, and on Google Earth, if you know what you're looking for, you can still see the ditch bank. So we're down here in Meadow Canyon. Water can come out of a hidden reservoir controlled by a head gate, a big pipe culvert. This did not have an established head gate. They just let it come out and back down into here. There was a diversion here. This is the point of diversion. This paperwork from 1919 talks about the diversion was right here, and they could send water down one ditch around the toe of the hill that Leaf Spring is on to water Broad Hollow. They could send it down the flood channel just to get rid of it. They could send it across the ditch in a pipe to another ditch that came down. There's a small reservoir just off the edge of the road where the Johnny Brown turnoff is. On the left-hand side going toward Leaf Spring, there's a reservoir right there that was fed and watered that field. And then you come on down below Broad Hollow, about where... Oh, about 136, this little canyon right in there, off to the left. As soon as you leave the gravel pit, heading up the canyon, there's one little driveway and a little red roof cabin up in the canyon that's kind of invisible most of the time. Directly opposite, there's another canyon that comes up this side. And right in between those two, there's a big diversion that takes all the floodwater again out of Meadow Canyon and sends it down the ditch bank along the edge of the road into what originally was the Half Moon Reservoir, which was a big half-moon-shaped reservoir all along the gravel pit, that lower Sagebrush Valley. And years ago, we started making another pond, and it's been kind of ugly and globbed up, and a year and a half ago, we redid it. It's a circular pond now, so I call that the Full Moon Reservoir, and it still dumps from that holding into the Half Moon Reservoir. One we can keep full for cows and for ducks and for beauty, and then the other one goes to the Half Moon Reservoir, and then along that ditch bank when it leaves the Half Moon Reservoir. And along here there are ways to water each of these little crested creek fields to leave the Half Moon Reservoir and then come down the canal along the edge of Deer Springs Wash and Meadow Canyon and feed. There's a really elaborate watering system in this well field that Paul and I have looked at and worked on a little bit, and I rebladed all of them this year. The water flows into that well field, and then there's two or three feed ditches, and on the far end there's a collection ditch. Any excess water hits that ditch and it brings it back across. So you're not losing any water if it does get to the end. And the top end of this well field this year, we actually irrigated quite well, and you can see a very visible difference in the 3 and 4 foot grass growth at the top end versus on down where it didn't get water. Well, there was enough water this year. We could have watered the whole thing and still had water to run all the way around the toe of the hill into what we call the polywog pond over here. We just didn't have things in place early enough. The way the ground is out here, as Ben and Paul can both tell you, if it's wet and drive a tractor on it, what's going to happen? So you've got to have your work done in the fall when it's dry so that next spring when it starts to melt, it flows where you want it to go. You can't wait till the flow starts or it's too late. And half the time I'm up here shoveling in the snow, cutting ditches through the snow bank, because when it starts to thaw and the water starts to flow, if you don't catch it right then, within a week or two or three, it's gone. And it's in the Colorado River, and we can't bring it back. But when it does start flowing, we can immediately start filling this. The Half Moon Reservoir will hold water, and I've had it flow over like a twice this year, but it leaks out the bottom. So what's the point in filling it?
It's coming up in my spring.
It's feeding the big spring right down here, Deer Creek Falls. We'll triple, quadruple, 10 times the amount if I fill that reservoir.
This spring down here, when we bought the tank, only had about 5 gallons a minute coming through. After Val filled this and some other things happened, we've measured it at about 100 gallons a minute. So, yes, it does change the underground.
And
I haven't been down. I think it takes a year or two or three years for it to come underground, so it may not arrive down here.
Well, I think it's a big pool. Everywhere it is. The other thing is, I can fill this reservoir. It's full. It's feeding underground to other things, which is beneficial, but it's full, and if we happen to use, you know, the water out of the Half Moon Moon Reservoir, and it's too low, I can fill up that and go ahead and drain it down to here. So, we, you know, it's a system of paying attention. Where is water? Where do we need it? Where is it too much? What do we need to control it? And keep things green and growing and beautiful and feeding on down through. So that's just a brief explanation of what has happened historically and currently in this area. Up Broad Hollow, is that the right spot? Yeah. There's a couple other reservoirs. I think on the ranch there were probably a dozen to 15 reservoirs, and most of them we allowed, or even before our time, they silted in and were washed over and lost. Greg's a perfect example. He's done a lot of parenting, custodial work on his property in caring for water and creating catchments. And we all need to do that on our own pieces of property, and then as an association, do it everywhere so we're catching what we can.
And the biggest lake was actually on Pogo.
I think most of them, obviously, they put them in a logical place because it was a natural catchment, and they could just do a week's worth of work with the bulldozer instead of 6 months drilling project. The hidden reservoir was in kind of a natural little canyon where they pushed this berm down across to create a dam. Well, a lot of it even predated them. This, it was Kenneth Clark, which I don't know if that's the name you even
know. One of the original pioneers. See, this was, there was 12 old pioneer homesteads here that the people used and did the water improvement. But there's been, look at the thousands and thousands of hours, weeks and years that's gone into this. And for us now to have to clean the ditches, not build them. Clean the reservoir, not build them. So there's a lot of things that we can enjoy today because of the pioneers and the years and years of work that they did. But first we had to find out where they really were.
One thing I wanted to read off here that...
You mentioned
that
machinery, but a lot of them did it with shovel and cans.
Well, even today, because of the way it is, some of this has to be done with a shovel because you can't get there at the right time when it's critical to move the water. If you try to drive a tractor there, all you're going to do is get stuck, fight it, make a big rut that's going to be a big problem. You know, you're going to cause the little bit of water you're caring for to wash down your big rut and erode and ruin everything you've tried to do. So it still takes, you know, walking, riding a four-wheeler, taking a shovel at the right time and doing it, and then, you know, this fall before things get snowed in and frozen, then I will take my little grader and touch up the ditches. This ditch right here has a tendency to jump the bank at about right there. Every year it'll do it either because the snow drifts in and blocks it, or it gets kind of flat so it silts out. And the silt creates its own dam. And then as soon as it builds up a little bit, it'll start going over here. And it's easier for it to run here and cut than to push through that silt. So if I don't clear it in the fall, next spring, the minute it starts to run, it's got to skip the snow on it, and it won't melt through the snow as fast as it'll go over the bank.
I was going to ask you, over in Slide Canyon, there's got three reservoirs that all filled with in since I've been here.
Right, and the lowest one has filled it in and then jumped the bank and cut down through, so it needs work, it needs attention. That's part of the system, and that's the reason the reservoirs are there, is to prevent erosion, to capture the silt, and so on. It may be every other year, it may be every 5 years, it may be once a year. It's got to be cleared out. Well, that's great material that is being washed down to us to clear out and fill that hole. The next year, we'll clear it out again and fill this hole and start filling what we've let erode for 40 years. I want to read this little teeny part off this waterproof that Vance printed and gave me. I mean, there's so much cool information, but they grew right here in this area here. They planted and grew 15 acres of oats, 15 acres of wheat, 15 acres of corn, an acre of potatoes, a quarter acre of beans, a half acre garden, I don't know what other things were in the garden, an acre orchard, 12 acres of alfalfa, and then 15 acres of pasture grass, which was Timothy, some other thing. Anyway, that was back. Next year will be 100 years. So this was going on in 1912. 1913, 1914. So that's a long time of growing some stuff here. And part of my motivation to do some of this is you may be involved at Deer Springs for a vacation place or a family reunion or a little retreat to hide out and get away for the weekend or whatever, but if you look at what's happening in the world and in the economy and in the city, it may happen, it may not happen, but if you had to have a place that you had water, you could grow some squash and some potatoes and support your family, it'd be better to know, you know, what kind of things have been grown here in the past and how did they grow them and why, than to have freeway shut down in Vegas and LA and Phoenix and come up here and have no ditch, no water. 10,000 other people coming behind you. So we'll go to Mill Creek and grow a cash crop. Anyway, I think this is something that can be continued on and plotted so people can see, and then it's fun to go out and work at some of these places. Just above the hidden reservoir, there's another little patch that I think was a garden. Still sitting there in the brush is a big plow that was pulled behind a team or eventually a tractor, but it's still got the big handles on it. You walk behind holding a big plow. No, it's not a Fresno. It's a. That does. That's it. Exactly. If you follow the fish bank from that feeds the hidden reservoir, and if you don't know where that is, drive up to where there's a culvert that brings the water from Crawford Canyon. Just stop your car right there and hike to the west. You'll go up the hillside, you'll run into a ditch, and you'll go, oh, I didn't know this was here. Follow that ditch south. It comes along, you can still look off and see the road, and I think Dad and Val might have been together the day it happened, but the way he even knew it was there was the cows, they were driving up the road, and cattle don't usually walk in a straight line. They're usually here and there and up and down the hillside. Well, they could look over, was it Charlotte steers?
White steers.
So they see a line of white steers on the hillside. Well, how can cows walk in a line, single file line, and they thought, that's kind of odd. Well, he went over to look at it or whatever, and there's the ditch bank cut down the hillside.
Found the hidden reservoir.
Down below there, it goes along the ditch bank, and then when it hits the spot, it's kind of flattened, goes back and wanders through the tree and around the hill to the actual reservoir, but there's another spot that's flattened off, which I really think was one of their garden orchard spots, It's all cleared off. It's going back in with sagebrush, but along the outer perimeter, they had banked it up so water could flow across it and not get over into the channel again. But over the southeast corner of that sagebrush flat is this big single, I don't know what you call it, one bottom plow. And the water flows back kind of through a little trail back around. The hidden reservoir originally had a gangplank, you know, the big telephone pole type pillars, and a walkway, and you'd walk out and you'd be standing 20 feet above the head gate, and you'd be out 20 feet or so out into the reservoir. That's all rotted and caved in from snow. We kind of rebuilt. I put up two new poles to hold the head gate 2 years ago, but I'd like to rebuild that with some rough sawn timber and stuff, and so it's a pretty soft spot, and it's not far off the road. I would like, and for a long time I would never even drive a four-wheeler into the reservoir. When we started working in there, we had to get the bulldozer in there, and I made a little bit of a road because I was going to haul clay in there to help seal it so it doesn't lose as much water. But prior to that, for 2 or 3 years, I was walking in and out just because I didn't want to create a highway. And that's one thing that I don't want to see out here, that every single trail then turns into a four-wheeler track, that turns into a jeep road, that turns into a freeway. And I know other people, Fred particularly, he has people constantly coming to his property and they think they have to drive every single road, every single tractor track. There's no reason. If you want to go exploring, explore it on foot first. And if there's a rope tied across the road, he probably doesn't want you to go in there. And you have no reason to go in there. So I think we need to be respectful of private lot driveways, but also even the ranch areas, that we don't need to go four-wheeling off just to see, you know, get out and walk. The hidden reservoir is probably 150 yards at most from Middle Canyon Road. If you stop and walk, I mean, it's very visible now because we've driven in and out of there with equipment. Yeah. Well, and as we do more work, right in that area is where we need to rebuild the, what's it called, Vance? Where the, there's a word. The point of diversion, but they had where they crossed. They took water from Hidden Reservoir and crossed Middle Canyon to feed the other side. Now, there was a flume there. Yeah, there's still big metal culvert type flume. I worked on it at one point with a guy named Larry Moore, and before that, I think Val had worked in that area a dozen times with the old C4 cat or something or other. That was, I think, before Mark drove it in the pond. Anyway, there's lots of things I can tell you stories, but I don't.
Lots of fun things that have happened. A lot of the people who own deer springs really don't know what they own, and really have not enjoyed some of these things. And so we started building some trail maps so that people could do different things and find out how exciting this property actually is. You know, as we get older, sometimes there's problems, and I have to mention this about my wife. When we returned from Argentina, she said, you know, I've raised 11 children, and I deserve a red Cadillac. So I said, okay, we'll get you a red Cadillac. And so we did. And she was happy. But I got a notification of going to my 60th class reunion in Mesa, Arizona. So we thought we'd jump in the old red Cadillac, the new red Cadillac, and go down to Mesa for the reunion. And in Kenneth, we don't usually ever lock our door to the car, you know. And so we went down, parked the car, went into the reunion, had a great time with my old classmates. It was a wonderful experience. And when we came out, we came out and jumped in the car, and as soon as we sat down, our radio wasn't there. In fact, the steering wheel wasn't there, so we grabbed our cell phone and dialed 911, and in just 3 or 4 minutes, the police were there. And Mr. Clarkson, what's the key? And so we explained, and he checked it out, and he said, Mr. Clarkson, we've checked this out thoroughly, and you and your wife are sitting in the back seat. That's what happens when you get old. I'm going to go through a presentation here real fast, but these things are going to be up here so you can read them to your heart's content. And there's also a copy here of these charts that you can take home with you. So don't worry about me going fast on trying to read this. And so we can have some fun. I'm going to clip these in, but it's hard to get them unclipped, so maybe I won't even do that. Here's the key, I think, to the future of Deer Springs. Togetherness. And what we can do to become united. Many of us have had unpleasant experiences the last 10 years because these two rules have been violated. And so let's see if we can use as today's meeting a commitment for staying together and united. Okay, from that, here's a unit at Deer Springs that includes a 20-acre lot, a membership with certain privileges. I thought there might be some other new people here that didn't maybe know some of the things about the 2,000 acres or the water improvements, and I think it's been very nicely covered as we have met here. You can lay that down. This may stand right here. Let's see if it works. I'm delighted with the cell phone and the internet and the things that Vance has covered, the things that Larry's covered. We've got a great property. There's some fun things that we can do here. I want you to know that my family members and your board of directors have not endorsed or sponsored the following possibilities. These ideas are only introduced for your consideration and modification. As we look to the future, where are we? What has history given us? And where are we going as we move forward? Ranch funding. I think we're all delighted with this new fence. I think we're delighted with the new bathrooms. There's some nice things that all of us can enjoy, but it does take money and effort on our part. If on the water rights or the water use, we may have a budget of $75,000. We got a little taste of it from what was in there. Agriculture, and I have a sheet on each of these. Thank you.
develop goals and comprehensive management plan that will be specific for future battle for the rail centers. Used on Deer Springs. Over on the west side, we've got million yards of volcanic cinders that make a great road topping. The drainage needs to be worked on, so whether we have muddy, rutted roads or whether we have an all-weather road, is things that maybe the 60,000 is too much, maybe it isn't enough. You guys think about it. Recreation activities, research and development of a comprehensive management plan to increase activities on the ranch. Coordinate and supervise these activities. You may need to have summer staff, winter sports. We've had a lot of fun this last year with snowmobiles up here. Hiking trails so people can find the hidden reservoir and other places. Horse rides, seminars, reunions. There's a lot of things that we can do. But it does take human influence to do the things that you and I should be doing. Cabins and furnishings, coordinate, maintain, and the furnishings of the cabin. You know, when we built the cabin, put that old sheet of linoleum on the floor, it should probably be changed with some nice tile like in the bathroom. There's some things that we can do today in our cabins to make them very nice, to upgrade all the buildings, to upgrade the furnishings, to purchase and maintain adequate linen and supplies. Winterizing, you know, we've talked about winterizing cabins that we can stay up here year-round for 40 years. We still haven't done very much. And it's so inexpensive to fix some cabins so they can be used during the winter. Well, they're still winterized, but there's still problems because they'll still freeze. So we're not home free even on 7 and 8. Okay, governing documents, research state requirements for legal ramifications for bylaws, rules, and professional governance, draft and recommendations, and updates for consideration of the DSRA board and create a master plan, research, create, publish a master plan for the development, maintenance, and operations of Deer Springs. Submit the master plan and suggestions to the board of directors and the membership for voting. Propose a schedule for capital improvements and suggestions for possible funding. So you say that's a lot of money, $500,000. Where's it going to come from? Say not out of my pocket. No, it's a group. There's things we can do to have the funding. One, for your consideration, authorize and facilitate an owner's right to sell or lease a half membership or a whole membership
facilitate an owner's right to sell or lease a half unit or a whole unit. Well, any of us can sell a whole unit a day if there's any money. There are many people that are calling would like to sell their unit. I'm not sure they can. They may be able to sell a half unit and be delighted with the results. Market about half units.
I'm sorry, Dale, question. What's a half unit?
10 acres instead of 20. Of those of us who have 20 acres, most of us have never walked the Four Corners to even know where the 20 acres is. 10 acres would give them a home base here to do probably all the things that they want to do and still spread the cost and opportunities on a wider scale. And we'll talk about this, or everybody can. I'm just suggesting this for everybody to noodle on a little bit. Market maybe 50 units on the 2,000 acre common area. And I have a map here to show where I would suggest. It's acreage that none of you have walked on. I'd say most of you don't know where it is. And it would give cash flow that I'll show you in a minute. Or we can raise the annual assessments. Or we can have a special ownership assessment to do some of the things that we're talking about. Linda and I looked at this, probably less than 10 out of the 300 members, less than 10 of our members used their 2 weeks of cabin time this year. And last year, it was about 15. So our membership are not using their 2 weeks of the cabin. And how do we want to change that? Well, I don't say we should go build all the cabins. Bad idea. Are we maintaining them? What weeks are we maintaining them? Consider authorize and facilitate an owner's right to sell or rent unused cabin time and rent privileges. If 100 weeks were rented for $50, for $500, that would raise $50,000 of new money that could be used by the ranch or the individual. Or if they would sell or lease 200 half memberships for $5,000, or 100 full memberships for $10,000, that involves $1 million. Most of the money for the year for the owners to the ranch, you think about it. Sell or lease half of your unit at your strength ranch. was on their glass chart, but this would be $1.5 million for this possibility. If annual assessment were changed to $600 a year for the next 5 years, it would raise $900,000. If there's a special ownership assessment of $2,000 times 300 units, it would be $600,000. For money sources, membership, income, cabin rental, marketing half units, units on the 2,000 acre common area, 3.6 million. The first chart I showed you said it'd be nice if we had $300,000. How do we as a group use our assets to accomplish the things that we would like to for our shelter and family? Here's a question there. Does your ranch need help? He's helping and he's moving. Members know that the ranch needs help. 200 of our members have not been here for years and only understand what we tell them and do not evaluate where the ranch is and what its needs may be. The general cleanup of the ranch, protect the assets, streamline the leadership, reduce the assessments, update the documents. Want memberships to say, is this a good plan? Will it help the ranch? Will it help the members? Does DSROA want to finance staff and organize and formulate the plan? Do we in our organization want to go that way? Or someone suggested, do you want to contract a concessionaire to fund and follow the decided plan? These two are immaterial. So, suggestions on the first sheet for these items, it would be helpful if each of you, there's a questionnaire here, write in here what you think priorities on the ranch should be. And here, recommend where the required funding should come from. It's not going to fall out of the sky. It's between the group of us that is going to do it. We don't have any big daddy to do some kind of a stimulus plan to do it, and it'd be helpful for you to go ahead and put your lot number on the thing so that we know what your preferences really are. So that's that. If each of you, as the time goes on, take one of these. It has the all the material that was on the board, but here are the two questionnaires. The one that says, how do you want to do it? Is it needed? And what our recommendation is. And then we'd like these to be mailed in or handed back in, and it will be helpful to know, really, what each of you want to see happen. Add some different things on it.
To all the members?
Yeah. I understand it's on the website. I don't think that it was too well responded to as far as the number of people. And it wasn't nearly as specific as this that would give some hardcore indication of what you prefer. So appreciate that. If there's other questions after reading and stuff, let's talk about them and see what we could come up with that would really, we've got a wonderful property. We've got a wonderful base. What the pioneers did or what we've done since then has really established something super. But I think that we need to pay attention and move forward from where we are in a very, very shaky economy. So, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we're ready to announce the new board of directors.
And do I get to do the Olympic winner?
Not for a moment.
Okay.
Okay, these are the results of the elections that have taken place through mail-in and the votes cast here today. Highest vote getter, Ben Clarkson, 104 votes. So, Ben, you're on the board. Second highest, Mark Cram, 103. You guys were pretty tough competition there. Third highest, Jody Akers, 96 votes. Where's Jody?
Sure, there.
Jody. Fourth highest, Ryan Dudunsky, 93 votes. Congratulations. So those are your four new board members. I express my appreciation, and I'm sure the entire association does for them in their... Ryan, tell us your name.
Last name? You didn't.
Dude. Okay. Thank you. So anyway, good job there. Let's give them a round of the rest of the count. Following items had other votes. Robert Allen, 48. Ken Wynn, 80. Michelle Sargent, 9. And one write-in for Paul Frazier.